Each year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the Feast of Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to festival custom. After they had completed its days, as they were returning, the boy Jesus remained behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Thinking that he was in the caravan, they journeyed for a day and looked for him among their relatives and acquaintances. But not finding him, they returned to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astounded at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been looking for you with great anxiety." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. He went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. And his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus advanced in wisdom and age and favor before God and man. The Gospel of the Lord. I'm not sure, but I think I might have just had like a little bit of a dyslexic moment and read a line wrong that really changed the meaning of the passage. So it should read, when he says, "Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" They did not understand what he said to them. I think I said it the opposite, so I just want to clarify. So to begin with, I want to ask for your indulgence, because I had a plan for what I wanted to preach today. I always preach on vocations on the Feast of the Holy Family. That's what I was prepared to do today. But you probably already know this, but I don't do a good job of keeping myself in the know about church happenings. So I got a text from a friend this morning that made me aware of the fact that the bishop just released an apostolic exhortation, so a letter to the faithful on the family. It can't have been out too long, because I looked at the date at the end of its promulgation, and its promulgation is today. So I'm not too far behind. But so when I got this message, I thought, well, it's the Feast of the Holy Family, and the bishop just released a letter on the family. So I'm going to go try to read it. And I read about a fourth of it. I still want to preach about vocations, but I want to try to do it a little bit in the context of what the bishop, at least what I read, of what the bishop has to say to families. Because family really is the context in which young men and women learn to discern God's call for them. So anyway, forgive me if this is a little bit not polished, because I've come up with it in the last half hour. But one of the things that stood out from what I've read so far of the bishop's document is he really heavily uses the imagery of farming and gardening to talk about family life. And he points out, you know, Bishop Olmsted is from, he grew up on a farm. He's from a family of farmers. That's the life that he knew before going away to seminary. And one thing that I found, a few years ago, I started very, very casually gardening myself. I'm not much of a gardener. I'm a very lazy gardener. But I found when I started gardening that all of the imagery that the saints use, the saints so often refer to gardening as an image to describe the spiritual life. And as I started doing it myself, I found that really is true. Because if you want to have a spiritual life, you have to be do a lot of work. You have to be attentive. You have to be pruned. You have to fertilize the soil, right? You have to pull out weeds and all that. Like, it's a really good image for the spiritual life. But also, Bishop Olmsted wants to use farming/gardening as an image for family life. And I think this is a really beautiful insight. And he talks about how families are the building blocks of society, and they're the building blocks of the smallest cell of the church. So much so that the church refers to the family as the domestic church. Right? It's like the church in miniature. So that we would say society is built up of a bunch of families. And we could even say that the church is made up of a bunch of little churches, little domestic churches gathered together around the altar together. And, wait, where was I going with this? So he uses this imagery of farming. He says that He says that a family has a nature, right? God created the family. And if we want to know what a family should look like, we should ask ourselves, what is the nature of family? And the nature of family is that it's meant to be sort of a soil of love, right? The essence of family is self-sacrificing love. And it's rooted, first of all, in the love that a husband and wife have for each other. And hopefully we all know that marital love is not about emotion or feeling or something that sweeps us off our feet or carries us away. Marital love is about commitment, about devotion, about self-sacrifice, and about service. The essence of marital love is the sort of commitment that I bound myself to this person, and I'm going to be faithful to that promise and love and serve them the best that I can in good times and in bad. And that that love, that secure love between husband and wife, that is the foundation of the family. And that's the soil, so to speak, in which the Lord plants the seeds of new lives. And that's the soil in which he wants new lives to grow. So we are meant, according to God's plan for the family and for, you know, the human race, we are meant to be, all of us, sort of planted in the soil of the love of our father and mother, and sort of grow and learn to love in that soil. Now, when we're discussing nature, if we say the family has a nature, the human person has a nature, there's something we need to understand. Nature has, so, you know, natural is kind of all the rage these days, right? Natural is very popular. We love everything natural and despise everything unnatural. Think about like Whole Foods and stuff like that. But if we only think about natural as that which is untouched by man, that exists in a sort of state of nature or wild, I think we have an actually impoverished understanding of nature. And our understanding of what nature means is not really in line then with what it has been, not only since the advent of Christianity, but really since, you know, the advent of Greek philosophy. Because if you go back all the way to Aristotle, for instance, he'd say, if we want to know the nature of a thing, there's some questions that we have to ask ourselves. Like, what is it? What is it for, right? What is its end? Right, and what is it fulfilled or satisfied, or and when does it come to its fruition, maturity? That's actually an essential element of understanding what nature is. And what our faith teaches us is that God made the world for us, and he gave us care over creation. So that tells us a couple things. Number one, even when we look at if we just look at the earth itself, If we want to understand the nature of the earth, we can't just understand the way it is as we find it. We have to understand what it's for. And what it's for is the flourishing of the human person. Therefore, if we look, for instance, for human flourishing, we need to cultivate land. Right? So an argument could be made that cultivated land is land that's more fulfilling its purpose and therefore its nature than land left wild. Right, and we need to cultivate land for our human flourishing, and we're the reason that creation exists, because God loves us enough that he made persons in his image and likeness and then gave us a world in which to live. And you might say, well, no, people have been living, there are people even today living, you know, in the jungle in an uncultivated life, and but that actually, that's the exception that proves the point, right? Because they're, you know, people living in the jungle, and they have no civilization, they have no cultivation. So for the full flourishing of the human person, we need to cultivate land. And so the nature of the earth, I think we can make an argument, is more fulfilled, is more discovered when we join it to our reason, when we order it properly so that it can bear fruit for our thriving and flourishing. Now, that doesn't mean that we can be abusive of nature, because to have care over creation means that we take care of it, we make sure that we're not destroying it. But to unite it to our reason and direct it towards an end is actually fulfilling its nature. So why am I talking about all this cultivation of land? Because human persons have a nature as well. And as we've already said, the seed in which God plants the soil of the human person is in the seed of his family, of the love of his father and mother. And the human person has a nature as well, which means he has an end. And he's only going to really be happy, and he's only really going to thrive insofar as he is able to direct himself towards his end, which we could say his end is a number of things. We could say his end is God. We could say his end is love. Right? We are made to love. That's what it means to be free, is to have the ability to love. And St. Augustine says that God made us for himself, but he made us for himself in the sense that he wants to be in loving relationship with us. So we are more, we thrive more and are fulfilled more and are living more according to our nature, we could say more naturally, when we're formed and raised in such a way that we're able to love. We're able to lay down our lives, we're able to sacrifice, we're able to serve, we're able to live for something greater than ourselves. Right? That's the fullness, the fulfillment of our nature. So we can see where family then plays an incredibly important role in forming young men and women to be able to fulfill their nature. And also, family plays an incredibly important role in giving life to vocations. Now, I just want to point something out. I don't want to be Debbie Downer here, but it's a real thing. We have a vocation crisis, and you've been hearing that for like 20, 30 years now. And the reason you've been hearing for 20, 30 years and are still hearing it today is because we're still in vocation crisis. If you look at the Diocese of Phoenix, we have more priests dying and retiring every year than we have priests getting ordained. And that's by a long shot. And I hear stories about the old days, you know, when there was rectories. Every rectory had like 8 or 9 priests. You know, not everybody was going to be a pastor. And when you were a young priest, you basically just sort of did what you were told and said the mass and visited the hospital. And it's such a different time. I can't even imagine so many young men becoming priests, or similarly religious, right? There used to be so many religious that they basically ran the church, right? If you go to Catholic school, if you send your kids to Catholic school and you wonder why it's so expensive, part of the reason why it's so much more expensive than it used to be is we used to have a whole army of nuns who basically just lived off of room and board, who educated our children. That saves a lot of money, right? Now, we have so few nuns. We're very blessed to have our religious sisters here, the Dominicans of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist. But the Dominicans of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist come from where? Ann Arbor, Michigan. And that ought to tell you something about how dire our vocational situation has become. As we've gone in a few decades from a situation where in any given city, there were probably more religious orders than you could count or keep track of. We've gone all the way to the extreme of if we want and are so blessed and lucky to have a few religious teaching in our schools, we've got to go across the country and borrow them from one of the few thriving religious houses that we have there, right? So we have to ask ourselves, why are we in this crisis of vocations? Has God stopped calling young men and women to the priesthood and religious life? Certainly not. So we must think that somehow the call is not being heard. Well, part of the reason we probably have a vocation crisis is because we have an anti-life society, so there's just lots of people missing. But I think also within our families, we're not necessarily, and within our church community, we're not necessarily doing enough to form our children to be open to the possibility that God is calling them to a celibate vocation. And maybe we're not teaching them to ask themselves that question. So we go back to the question of farming and cultivating and what this has to do with vocations and what the relationship between vocations and family has to do. Bishop Olmsted says in his document, he says that parents should not be afraid of the sacred authority they have over their children. Parents should not be afraid of the sacred authority they have over their children. So we get back into our question of what nature really is. There are many, many, and I, as an educator, I encounter this all the time. There are many parents who kind of are of the opinion that we should let the child sort of direct himself or herself. That if we impose our will upon them too much, that's sort of unnatural. Now, nobody really believes this in actual fact. Because, for instance, if your kid only wants to eat chocolate cake, and has a horrible aversion to green vegetables, you're not going to say to the kid, okay, you never have to eat vegetables and you can just go straight to dessert every meal, right? You say, no, the kid doesn't know what's best for him. It's my job to make sure that him or her, that he or she is getting what they need to grow and be healthy. And meanwhile, I'm going to teach them what's good for them, right? I don't let my kid decide whether they want to go to school, right? I don't say, well, you know, when he's 18, he can decide whether he wants to be literate or not. Right, that would be abusive. We make decisions for our children. We shape them to be how we think a healthy, well-adjusted member of society should be. But what has happened is, for many of us, religion has dropped out of that equation. And we say, I don't want to force religion on my child. I want to let him or her decide for themselves. But actually, you have, as parents, a huge and sacred responsibility to shape, to form your children as best you can. I mean, it's a cooperative art. They still have free will. But to form your children to love and to serve God. And there's all sorts of things you can do in terms of tending the soil and pruning the bush and pulling weeds that's going to help or hinder your child from being able to love and serve the Lord. And I think one of the things that we can do in terms of the formation of our children is from a very early age, teach them to discern what God wants. Teach them to ask themselves the question, what does God want me to do in this situation? And then have in the background always the question, from the time they're very young, we can have the question in mind, is God possibly calling me to be a priest or religious? And I've found that so many people just never even ask themselves that question. It never enters into their mind. I don't know where they think priests or religious come from, but it never really enters their mind that maybe I am called to this vocation. Maybe the Lord is actually giving me this great gift of being able to be united to himself, be sort of kept for himself, and be able to serve the church as priests and religious. My high school, we have 7 men in seminary right now. And when people ask me what I've done, we haven't done much, but one of the things we do is we ask every single person to consider it. And I've been told over the years, young men and women will come to me and say, you know what, I've never actually considered the possibility that I might be called before. And so sometimes we're growing up and we're never seriously considering, is God calling me to this vocation? That's something that you can begin to teach them when they're very, very young. Right, to discern what God is wanting from their lives and to ask themselves the question, am I called a priest or religious? Finally, on the subject of your sacred authority as parents, parental authority is a real thing because God gave these children to you and in a sense they belong to you. So in addition to the question of, you know, do we raise them so that they ask the question, am I called? There's the deeper question of, am I open to my son or daughter being called by the Lord to himself? And sometimes that's a scary thought to us. And I understand why. Especially if you are living faithfully your vocation and really trying to fulfill God's plan for your marriage. Bishop Olmsted says in this document, family is probably the greatest source of both joy and pain in our lives, right? So if we are really living our vocation to family life, then probably, yes, some of the greatest pain, but also the greatest joy that we have is in our families. And if you have been blessed with many children, you probably experience this as a great gift and a great source of joy for you, and you want that for your children. And so I can understand why we're a little bit nervous about the fact that maybe God has called them to do something different, to live this life that we're not familiar with. And I want to encourage you to trust the Lord, first of all, right? If the Lord calls your son or daughter to himself, this is a great blessing for your son or daughter, and it's a great privilege. And the fear you have of, will my son or daughter be happy if the Lord calls them to a vocation? I want to put that fear to rest. Because the studies, actually, people have done studies on this. The studies show that the happiest group of people in the United States of America is priests. Now, are there unhappy priests and religious? There certainly are, just like there are many unhappy people in marriage. But if they are unhappy, it's not the vocation itself, it's the way that they're living it, right? It is actually a great privilege and a great joy to be called to serve the Lord. So don't be afraid if your son or daughter begins to discern this. The Lord will make them happier than anything else in the world, I promise you. And to be set aside for himself, to be called to that, is actually a great gift and a great privilege that I, for one, am incredibly thankful for and would never, ever want to give back. But if you are not open to it, that is going to be a great hindrance to their being able to live that vocation. And I've seen it happen a lot of times where somebody thinks they have a vocation and their parents just aren't comfortable with it, and often it falls apart, right? Finally, to put a positive spin on that, and I'm speaking especially to mothers here, I have heard so many stories, and in fact, Father Steve preached about it from his own life at the earlier Mass today. I've heard so many stories about mothers who, in a sense, consecrate their child to the Lord, and that child ends up becoming a priest. I've heard that so many times that I have to think that there's something in it. Now, the church teaches us to pray for vocations, right? Jesus told us, ask the master of the harvest to send laborers for the harvest. In other words, we're taught not to say, Lord, it would be nice if you sent us some priests, but to ask, Lord, call from our midst men to serve your church as priests and women to serve your church as religious. I think that we can pray specifically that God would call people from this community. We can pray that God would call somebody sitting here today to serve him as a priest or religious. And I think that you as parents, and for some reason it's especially mothers, you as mothers, you can pray that the Lord will call your son to be a priest or your daughter to be a religious. And I think that prayer can be extremely powerful. So on this Feast of the Holy Family, what I encourage you all to do today is to strive to make your families a soil where people can learn to love, and where your children can learn to seek their happiness in laying down their lives for something greater than themselves, and where they grow up learning to ask the question of whether God is calling me to serve him as a priest and religious, to trust that if he is, that's going to be a great source of happiness for them. And maybe even, you can pray throughout their lives, asking that God will take one of your children, sort of as the first fruits of your harvest, take them to himself to serve him and his church, and that prayer just may be answered.